Welcome to episode 61 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast and stage 5 of the 2007 Amgen Tour of California. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome to part 5 of our week-long coverage of on-the-scene same-day coverage of the 2007 Amgen Tour of California. As I've been saying all week, today's individual time trial in Solvang would be a critical stage in this week's race, and that prediction turned out to be absolutely correct. But before we get to today's recap, an update on the Pro Tour Grand Tour feud and an interview with cycling author Dave Shields. It was a wild day out on the race course, so strap in, sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Fredcast is brought to you by Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, providing quality products and unparalleled customer service to the cycling community for over 20 years. And here's another reason to shop at Cambria. Use the promo code found in tonight's show notes at www.thefredcast.com for 20% off your entire order at Cambria Bike. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, they outfit the world. Before we get to today's show, just a couple of notes for you. First of all, don't forget that the Fredcast Listener Survey is still ongoing. You have until February 28th, 2007 at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time to get your survey completed so that you'll be entered to win one of two iPod Shuffles or some other great prizes that we'll be giving away. You can find the survey at www.thefredcast.com, and there's a link on the right-hand side of the page about completing the survey. Please go there and do it. It will help me improve the show and also help me explain to sponsors why they might want to advertise on the Fredcast. Now, speaking of sponsors, you well know that Cambria Bicycle Outfitter is our current sponsor, and they are a great company. A lot of you have mentioned to me that you've ordered from them and that you've had a positive experience, and that is great. Cambria is still offering a 20% off your entire order discount, and if you click on the link on thefredcast.com, you will find the promo code that you need to use. But just one note of caution, that discount applies to everything but bikes and frames. So please keep that in mind, because I've gotten some questions and comments from you about that. Cambria is doing a great job at the Amgen Tour of California. They've been doing very good business, and I know several of you have gone up and mentioned that you've heard Cambria on the Fredcast. And if you are going to the next couple of stages, I sure would appreciate it if you'd stop by their booth and at least let them know you heard about them on the Fredcast. One of the things that was mentioned in Jeff Roke's interview yesterday on our coverage of Stage 4 of the Amgen Tour of California was the fact that there are so many Pro Tour teams involved in this year's race. As a matter of fact, there are 9 Pro Tour teams that are here in California racing in the Amgen Tour of California, and that's the maximum number that would have been allowed to participate in this event, and it has made for a world-class field. Now, one of the things that we've been talking about here on the Fredcast for over a year is that there has been this ongoing feud brewing between the UCI, the International Cycling Union, and the organizers of the 3 Grand Tours, cycling's biggest, most famous events: the Giro d'Italia in Italy, the Vuelta a España in Spain, and of course, the world's most well-known cycling event, the Tour de France. Now, the issues surrounding this feud primarily are about who gets invitations to these events and who dictates the calendar of the cycling events around the world. Now, in most recent days, one of the issues that's come up is that the organizers of the Tour de France have said that they won't allow a particular team, specifically the Unibet.com team, to participate in their events. And there's an upcoming event in a few weeks, Paris-Nice, won last year by Floyd Landis. The organizers of the Tour de France, ASO, have said that their reasons for not wanting Unibet to participate rest in French law and whether or not a gambling firm should be allowed to sponsor a professional sports team. Last week, the UCI met with the organizers of the Tour de France, and unfortunately, there was no room for compromise, and they walked away from the table still having no agreement about the race. In addition, the organizers have made an agreement with the French Cycling Federation to make it a national calendar event, essentially taking it off the Pro Tour calendar in their opinion. The UCI, for their part, is saying that if you're going to exclude one Pro Tour team, then you are essentially excluding all Pro Tour teams and have therefore instructed the Pro Tour teams not to attend Paris-Nice this year. In a release by the UCI dated February 23rd, they said, following the agreement made by ASO, organizer of Paris-Nice, and the French Cycling Federation, according to whom this race is apparently no longer registered on the UCI international calendar, but on the FFC or French Cycling Federation national calendar, the UCI, in accordance with its rules, has been obliged to take the following decisions. Number one, teams holding a UCI Pro Tour license and UCI professional continental teams will not be allowed to take part in this race. The rules, in fact, stipulate that these two types of teams cannot participate in a national race. Number two, international anti-doping bodies will not be able to test riders in this race. According to the rules, only national anti-doping bodies are allowed to carry out such tests at national races. Number three, UCI international commissaires will not be able to officiate at Paris-Nice. The mission of a UCI international commissaire is to ensure that UCI rules are respected. He or she cannot therefore support a race where the organizer is blatantly violating the international cycling rules. The UCI is sorry that teams and riders have been taken hostage by an organizer wanting to flout the rules that all parties in cycling are obliged to respect. This is like a declaration of war. It has now come to blows between the two sides in the Grand Tour, Pro Tour debacle, and it's put the riders and the teams in the middle. As a matter of fact, at yesterday's press conference following Stage 4 of the Amgen Tour of California, Patrick Lefebvre, the director sportif of the Quick-Step Energetic team, was asked specifically about this. And I want to play this clip for you so you can hear it in his own words. I have to warn you that it was extremely noisy in the room and there was no way to hook up into the PA system as there has been the last couple of days. So it may be a little noisy. I will try to clean up the sound as much as possible. But here's what Patrick Lefebvre had to say.
I'm tired of it. I hate all this mess, I think, because these people have to understand, because they're playing with our future, the future of cycling. And I'm sad that they always give the warm potato in our hands, because it's not nice for the sport. We were struggling for a year more, almost, against doping. And now, you see, fighting in the middle of the road, UCI against the big tours, and for what? We are in a business. The name of this business is cycling. We are on the same boat. If we want to or we don't want to, we have to go together. And those people who doesn't understand this, I'm ashamed for them.
So I think that's pretty clear about how he feels. He doesn't want to get that warm potato, as he called it, anymore, and he thinks that it's unfortunate that the teams are always the ones that are always being handed that warm potato, or a hot potato for those of you who aren't Belgian. He was then asked what the team's reaction was going to be because Paris-Nice is coming up so soon, and this is what he had to say.
They have to understand that you can't make a film without the actors. And we have the actors and we pay them. So if they want to make a film, they need us. But we will have a meeting next Friday in Belgium, Brussels, and we're going to take position.
So the teams will have a meeting next Friday in Belgium, and they will decide what their reaction is going to be. The UCI seems to be very clear that the Pro Tour teams are not allowed to race as a result of UCI rules. Meanwhile, ASO and the French Cycling Federation are clear that this is not a Pro Tour event. This is very sad for the sport of cycling. As Lefebvre said, he's ashamed for the people that are involved in all of this bickering. We'll find out what's going to happen, and of course, I'll bring it to you right here on the Fredcast. Well, while the racers were out doing their individual time trials on the roads of Santa Barbara County today, I had a chance to sit down with cycling author Dave Shields. Now, Dave is an award-winning author of several novels. two of which are about cycling, and they are highly acclaimed, and he's the only author to win the prestigious Ben Franklin Award for a novel about cycling. So here's what Dave had to say about his books. Dave, tell me about your books and what the cycling fan will get out of them.
Well, I wrote The Race as a way to try to... At the time, Lance Armstrong had really brought a lot of attention to cycling, but I felt like most people just totally underestimated the sport. They had no understanding at all of what was going on, and I thought if I write a really compelling story, I can teach a lot of people the strategies and tactics, and they'll keep watching the tour after the Armstrong era is over. And that's really what's happened. I get emails all the time from grandmothers and things like that, people you'd never think of as cycling fans, telling me how much they love cycling because of these books.
So give us the bullet on The Race. Tell us what it's about.
The Race is the story of a young American cyclist in the Tour de France. They're going down a very fast descent when the team leader suddenly crashes right beside him. And the race moves on really quick, obviously. And he's got to make some lightning quick decisions. Now he's out of radio contact with the team leader, with the director, everyone. And he knows that some of the things that he wants to do aren't going to be exactly what they want him to do. So he's got to really redefine himself. He's been thought of as an underachiever, and he gets this opportunity and takes the most, whatever advantage of it, and it's just driven from there.
For those of us that are cyclists, there's a lot of people in our families and friends who just don't get what we do. I told my family I was coming here, and they said, oh, are you going to be riding in it? So is this a good book for us to give to our families to explain to them what it is that's going on out there?
Without a doubt. Jim Burrell, who runs this race, he gave it to his wife because his wife, she didn't know what he was doing, and she said, wow, I finally understand. Matter of fact, Marty Jemison, who's a two-time tour finisher, his father-in-law, Marty was a big help to me in writing The Race. His father-in-law said, Marty, why didn't you give me this book while you're still racing? Now I understand what you do. So it really explains the obsession. Once you understand what the mentality is and what the tactics are, you can understand the sport so much better.
Okay, so how did you get your understanding to the level where you could write a book like this?
Well, initially, I used to race criteriums and things like that, but then I really turned to triathlons, and I got pretty good. I won a couple of triathlons at the amateur level, Olympic distance and things like that. And so I had already written a novel. I knew something about writing novels. This idea came to me of The Race, a story that I wanted to write. But I really knew that without somebody with inside expertise, I couldn't do it. And that man was Marty Jemison. Marty happened to marry a woman that I hired years ago. And so I'd followed his career a lot. And I contacted Marty, asked him if he'd read the book. And he said, I have no interest whatsoever in reading your book. And so his wife talked him into it, and he ended up reading it in only one day. He called me back, and he said, it's the first time I felt like I was back in the Peloton after my retirement. So I took that as a huge compliment. And Marty has actually told me he believes one day somebody will win the Tour de France, and they'll say this is the book that got them addicted to cycling.
Now tell me about the Tour, one of the other books that you're talking about here today.
The race did so well, and immediately the first comments I was getting is, when does the sequel come out? And I had literally never even thought about writing a sequel. But once they said that, they said it so obviously set up for a sequel, and I could see that too, where a sequel went. But the race it's not driven by the story of winning a race. It's driven by the internal challenges this kid's going through. And I thought, I can't write a sequel where it's just a race. That just is not enough to drive a story. But the big compelling thing out there was drug use. And because of the access that the race gave me to athletes, lots of them would talk to me about things that they didn't even want to talk about in public, not in their biographies, not in anything else. The pressures they're under for drugs, the times they might think about, maybe I should use them, things like that. By taking the information they gave me, keeping it completely confidential and putting it out fictionally, it's an opportunity to really say some important things. These guys, they desperately want to drive drugs out of sport. But it's not like you can just come out and say, so-and-so is using drugs and here's what they're doing. I mean, that would be career suicide. So this is a way of educating the fans, and when the fans are educated, that gives us an opportunity to get rid of the drugs.
Okay, very topical. And also topical is your next book, that is not quite ready yet, but tell us about that book. What's the topic, and how did you arrive at doing the writing of that book?
Well, in I was in July, on July 2nd, I was doing the live ticker for the Daily Peloton. They had invited me in as a guest. And we were in the, they do it out of like a chat room, a private chat room. And suddenly there's this person shows up. I don't know who it is. And the guy who's running the chat room goes, "Hey, Saul, how are you doing?" And Saul says, "Have you met Dave Shields?" Or the guy says to Saul, "Have you met Dave Shields?" And Saul says, "No." And the guy says, "Dave's an author. He writes books." And Saul says, "I want to write a book." So Saul said, "Send me your phone number." So I sent him my phone number by private chat while I'm doing this live ticker. My phone rings 2 seconds later, and Saul says, "Let's figure out how to write this book." We actually didn't really even take it seriously until September, and I met with him and his family. And once I learned the story, I was blown away. I already had known Saul's story. It's what you and everyone else doesn't know about Saul's story that took it to a new level for me. About 20 people so far have read the book. They all tell me they've been in tears the whole time they read it. One person told me that it should be read by every high school senior in the country. Most of them have said this is a shoo-in for Oprah. It's really, I mean, obviously that's a huge opportunity for me, but it also says a lot about Saul. Saul is an amazing guy, even if it weren't for this accident making an amazing story. He's just one of the kindest, most genuine, most driven people that you'll ever meet in your life. And all of that is part of the reason that he's made this miraculous recovery. He already, the injury didn't create character, it revealed it. And that's what you really see in the book. You see a kid that's got, you know, I mean, a brain injury takes everything away. And what came through was character, just in the extreme. People are going to be amazed.
When's the book available?
It will come out on September 1st. We're pre-selling copies now, and you can get them a month in advance through my website. So you'll get your copy on August 1st, even though it's not on bookstore shelves till September 1st. So at daveshields.com.
Okay, great. And that's where they can find out about all of these books, right?
Yeah, that's correct. You can see all the reviews and lots of other information there. You can also get some Saul wristbands and things like that.
Dave, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, thank you very much. Anytime.
Well, if you've been listening to the show for any length of time, I think you understand why I wanted to talk to Dave Shields. His books talk about everything that I have been focusing on for the last year plus here on the Fredcast. Number one, he talks about the personal aspect of racing. And that is what intrigues me the most. Second, unfortunately, he talks about doping. I wish I didn't have to, folks, but it is something that we must deal with in this sport. And third, he talks about a story that has captivated me and captivated many of you based on your emails and what you've told me when I've spoken to you, and that is the story of Saul Raisin. So I picked up Dave's books. I actually came home. And I started reading the first one. I sat down for a moment and I just figured, oh, I'll read a couple of sentences and see how it goes. And I was captivated by it. I started reading the race and it starts off the prologue, and I'm not giving anything away here, but the prologue of the book talks about the main character when he's 14 and he's out riding on a rural highway at the top of a mountain in Utah, and he has a crash. And I got goosebumps because we've all crashed. You know, I've crashed. And the way that Dave described the crash, I felt like it was one of my crashes. So I'm really looking forward to reading the rest of the books. And again, you can find his books at www.daveshields.com. Now, before we get to the recap of today's stage and your ability to hear from some of the riders who were in the stage, I wanted to talk to you just a little bit about my impressions today versus the last several days of the Amgen Tour of California. Now, today started out clear and cool with a lot of wind. When I left my hotel room in Solvang this morning and I walked outside, it was chilly. It was probably in the 40s. Again, folks, that's chilly for California this time of year. Sorry. And it was breezy. And when I headed up to the start line, the sky was blue. There were just a few puffy clouds. And the start line was right in the parking lot of the Mission Santa Ynez. It was a striking juxtaposition of new and old. You had the cyclists and their high-tech bicycles with power meters and electronics and radios and carbon fiber and titanium and disc wheels and the time-trialing sleek helmets And then right across the parking lot was this Spanish-style mission, and literally the priests in their robes walking around watching the race. It was really a sight. Now, the mood in the team area today was very, very different than the mood every other day. On the other days, the teams were huddled together and doing their thing, and before the race, there was a lot of joking around going on. You can see it in some of my pictures. It's why I've put some of the pictures of the start line. For instance, yesterday when they started in Seaside, California, take a look at those pictures on the website of Stage 4, and you'll see the riders joking with each other as they get ready for those parade laps through town. Today, it was all business, and you could see it in their eyes. There was a focus there. To use an awful phrase, they really had the eye of the tiger. Those guys who were going for a really fast time were someplace else. They were not in that parking lot. They were in their thoughts. They were thinking about the course. They were visualizing, as we've talked about here before. And it was a very intense vibe and very different than the previous few days on the Amgen Tour of California. You remember that yesterday I had the opportunity to interview Mark Olson, the team manager for Team Priority Health. When I saw Mark this morning, he graciously invited me into one of his team cars to chase one of their riders, Teddy King, out on the race course. Of course, I jumped at the chance. And it was a very, very different race course today than previous days. Now, I've ridden much of this race course before because Solvang is someplace where I really love riding. I've done Solvang Centuries up here and Preludes, and I've also done some riding on my own up in Solvang. And so I was familiar with the course. Now, when I've ridden it, it's either been with thousands of other cyclists or with cars on the road. Today was something completely different. Today, once the rider leaves the chute, and by the way, I got a great picture of what the rider's perspective is. I actually got up on the platform that the rider leaves, and I got a great shot looking right down that starting chute. So take a look at it. I'll have that up on the site in just a couple of hours. Once the rider leaves the chute and leaves town, it gets very, very quiet. And it is there's a CHP car, California Highway Patrol car, probably a half a mile in front of the rider, maybe a quarter at the most. And then there's the rider. And then following the rider, and not too close because of the rules of the UCI, following the rider is one team car with all of the parts, the wheels, a spare bike, just in case the rider needs it. And you can see how focused the rider is. And Teddy was all about focus as he was out there on the course today. And I've got some pictures through the windshield that you can take a look at. But it is you and the road and your bicycle, and that's it. And I can't imagine what was going through Teddy's mind as he was out there on the course. For the most part, the course is not a difficult one. There is one climb up Balcom Canyon, but then once you get up to the top of that climb, it's all downhill from there with one short climb again in town, and then you're into the finish line. I was very taken with how lonely and how difficult it is for a time trialer and how little comfort he has out there. It is just you and your adrenaline and going as hard and fast as possible. Solvang is an area that's very, very popular for cycling, and because of the weather this time of year, it is also where a lot of professional teams choose to have their training camps. Team CSC trained there this year. The Discovery Team trained there this year, and Team Priority Health trained there this year. So as we were driving, I asked Mark whether or not they had had a chance to pre-ride this course, and Mark says, "David, we rode this course many, many times. My guys are very familiar with it because we were here." As we were following Teddy, I asked Mark what the rules were when it comes to driving a team car while you have one of your athletes in an individual time trial. And he told me that it's very important that you remain at a safe distance so that you're not somehow giving your rider an advantage. For instance, today, Teddy was battling some pretty strong crosswinds at one point, and there is no way that that team car can go anywhere near him in such a way where it might be providing him shelter from the wind. It's just him and the road and the elements, and that's it. And the reason that this came up, interestingly, was because one of the race commissaires, for some reason, chose, and probably randomly, chose to shadow our car for the entire race. I think it may have made Mark a little bit nervous, but he handled it very well. And Teddy rode very strongly. Now, Teddy ended up finishing somewhere near the bottom of the pack, and the reason for that, according to Mark, was that Teddy wasn't planning on trying to be up at the top of the standings in the individual time trial, and he's saving himself for tomorrow and for Sunday. However, the great thing for Team Priority Health is that they did have two of their riders at the top of today's field. Tom Zirbel came in 12th, just 1 minute and 16 seconds behind the stage winner. And Ben Jacquemains took 10th today, 1 minute 14 seconds behind the race leader. That's a really fantastic result for Team Priority Health. And I just want to wish them my congratulations. And again, a huge thank you to Mark Olson for allowing me the opportunity to see an individual time trial from that perspective. It was totally unique and very much appreciated. Now, beyond the fact that Ben Jacquemains took 10th in today's individual time trial, every single other rider in the top 10 was either from Team Discovery or Team CSE. Those two teams have been battling it out all week. The reigning world champion in time trialing is Fabian Cancellara, again, of course, from Team CSC. And when he came across the line, it was a blistering speed, and it looked like he had a very good chance of winning the event. But then came a couple of big boys, Jason McCartney coming across with a time of 30 minutes, 5.14 seconds. And then the question was, who would end up winning the day? Would it be Jens Voigt, who started second to last? Or would it be Levi Leipheimer, who started as the last rider out on the course? Jens Voigt came in with a fantastic speed of 29 minutes, 58.51 seconds. But at the splits, it really did look like Levi Leipheimer was going to be faster. Now, Levi said that he had heard out there on the race course that he was leading, and he especially heard it heading into Los Olivos. Los Olivos is a little town about halfway through the race course, and there was a stage there with an announcer who was announcing each rider as they went by. As a matter of fact, when we went by in the Team Priority Health car, as Teddy went by, the announcer mentioned that at that point, another Team Priority Health rider had the fastest speed. It was Tom Zirbel at that point who he was talking about. Well, when Levi went by, he heard the announcer say that his split time was the fastest out on the course, but he was given a little bit of misinformation by Johan Bruneel. Remember, Johan Bruneel, the team director of Discovery Channel, is riding in the car behind Levi Leipheimer, and he's in contact with him by radio. And so he is keeping track of the time because, of course, Levi wants to maintain the most aerodynamic position possible so that he can go as fast as possible. So he's providing Levi with the time out on the course. And here's what Levi said Johan was telling him.
And when I got to Los Olivos, I could hear the announcer say I had the best time. That's always very motivating. And Johan was saying, well, you're ahead of Jens, but I don't know how much. And then with 5K to go, he said I was 5 seconds ahead. And I kind of figured he might be lying to me a little bit to get me to go faster. And then with 2 or 3K to go, he said I had 2 seconds ahead. And I'm glad he did it because every second counts.
And that's absolutely true. In a time trial, every second does count. And here's Levi telling us about how he was sort of taking some risks in the downhill off Balcom Canyon.
I was taking some risks, and at one point I actually clipped a bush with my shoulder. Thinking back, I was like, wow, I was really going for it. At the time, I was just so focused.
Now, at the time that Levi was out on the course, the best time was posted by his teammate Jason McCartney from Team Discovery, and his time was 30 minutes and 5.14 seconds. Now, Jason started a full 20 riders before Levi, and while Levi was out there on the course, Jason had that best time, and that was definitely, it had to be in Levi's mind. But then Jens Voigt, who started just ahead of Levi, came across the line and beat Jason's time at 29 minutes, 58.51 seconds. And as you'll recall from a few days ago, Levi joked that Jens is such a great time trialer that there was no doubt that he was going to be big competition. And I could see in Jens' eyes at the next day's press conference that he was gunning for Levi on this time trial. And then Levi came across the line and the crowd erupted in cheers as he came across in 29 minutes, 40.44 seconds, beating Jens Voigt by a full 18 seconds, retaining not just the Golden Leaders jersey of the Amgen Tour of California for this year, but also increasing his lead over Jens Voigt in the general classification. And here's Levi talking about what his motivation was in today's race to go as fast and as hard as he could.
I would say my major motivation today was, I mean, besides wanting to win, obviously, my major motivation was I did not want to go to the dinner table tonight and look my teammates in the eye and tell them, you know, I'm sorry, but I couldn't defend the lead here because after all the work they did. So that's really what kept me going, and I was able to push harder than normal. And I think it was, for me, that time trial was personally a great achievement.
So with that great achievement of Levi's today, he retains the Golden Leaders jersey in the Amgen Tour of California. He is 21 seconds now ahead of second place rider Jens Voigt, 54 seconds ahead of Discovery's Jason McCartney, 1 minute 6 ahead of CSC's Bobby Julich, and 1 minute 20 ahead of CSC's Stuart O'Grady. Seeing a trend here, Discovery and CSC again leading the top five in the general classification. Well, tomorrow is stage 6 of the 2007 Amgen Tour of California, the penultimate stage in this year's race. It begins at 11 a.m. in Santa Barbara, California, and then heads toward the city of Ojai. Between Ojai and Santa Barbara, there are two Category 4 King of the Mountains climbs, and then a sprint in the town of Ojai. Leaving Ojai, there's yet another King of the Mountains climb, this time a Category 3, before heading into the city of Santa Paula and the day's second sprint. From there, it's up Balcom Canyon, a Category 4 climb, and the fourth King of the Mountains climb and final King of the Mountains climb of the day and of the entire event, before a finish with three circuits of 3.5 miles each in my old hometown, the city of Santa Clarita, California. It's going to be interesting to see whether or not CSC decides to attack Discovery on this stage and try to make up those 21 seconds. It's going to be a big battle as we get into the second longest stage of the entire race at 105.4 miles. The race organizers are saying that the next 2 days could be some of the biggest crowds that we've seen so far. I will tell you that the crowd today in Solvang was impressive for a Friday. There were thousands and thousands of people there. I couldn't even begin to count, but it was thick with people. The city of Santa Clarita has spent a lot of time and a lot of money promoting this event, and I'm expecting that there will be a lot of people there considering it's a Saturday and considering the proximity to the city of Los Angeles, and there's no doubt that Long Beach, the finale on Sunday, is also going to be huge. It was announced today that the 2007 Amgen Tour of California has already surpassed 1 million spectators out there on the road, and that number was surpassed earlier this year than it was last year. So this year is yet again another success. I will be back with you again tomorrow, bringing you all of the results and some interesting interviews from the city of Santa Clarita. I've been getting some great emails of support from you Fredcast listeners out there, and if you'd like to send me an email, please do so. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. Of course, you can also send a voicemail to the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 206-203-FRED. And please go to the website at www.thefredcast.com if for no other reason than to see some of the great pictures that I've gotten over the last 5 days of racing. And again, I'll be posting the Stage 5 photos as soon as I can. So enjoy your Saturday, safe in the knowledge that I'll be here tomorrow with another update for you. And if the weather is good enough where you are, get out there, get training on your bike, and if you do, enjoy the ride.